Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's October 23rd, 42 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Wasatch back. Yeah, another gorgeous day expected across the Beehive State. We've got temperatures climbing yet again well above average. Upper 60s expected in Park City with sunshine. Into tomorrow, we do have a weak front that's grazing by northern Utah. It'll bring some clouds overnight into early Thursday. Temperatures will be near 35 tomorrow morning, but just 52 for the high tomorrow, so closer to seasonal averages. There's a slight chance of a stray shower. The best chance will be further north, just along the Idaho-Utah state line. So really moisture-starved with this next trough that's sliding by. Overnight lows near freezing into Friday. Temperatures quickly rebounding as high pressure builds back in. We'll see low 60s on Friday for highs with warming temperatures into the weekend. So low 40s return for overnight lows. Mid to upper 60s for daytime highs, about 67 on Saturday. 66 on Sunday. A few high clouds passing by as well. Our next system, though, is still showing up for Monday, Tuesday next week, so plan on increasing moisture on Monday. Temperatures just 56 for the high. Showers expected in the afternoon with rain over to snow, if not a wintry mix, into early Tuesday. A high of just 38 is expected on Tuesday as well, with overnight lows near 30. Heber looking at 73 today, sunny. Just 58 for the high tomorrow. We'll see sunshine into the weekend on Friday with a high of 67, so a quick rebound, 10 degrees warmer on Friday with overnight lows jumping from the mid-20s on Friday morning to near freezing Saturday, and on Sunday even 37 for the overnight low with temperatures in the low 70s this weekend. In Heber, partly cloudy skies. Plan on chance of rain showers increasing on Monday afternoon and evening. A high of 60, dropping to 24 for the overnight low into Tuesday with 46 for the high. We'll see snow showers early with a wintry mix by Tuesday afternoon.
Okay, we just wanted clear for Halloween, so
clear. We're keeping track. There's another system lined up behind it. Timing on it with it this far out could change, but hopefully it stays away for Halloween night, and it should be here Friday morning. So keep our eyes on that.
Okay, Nate, thanks.
You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with High Valley Transit Executive Director Caroline Rodriguez, along with board chair, Kim Carson. They'll recap yesterday's retreat. And Park City Manager Matt Dias previewing this week's City Council meeting. And board members and the Executive Director of Meals on Wheels, Summit Utah Wasatch Counties, Claudia McMullen, Eileen Mullane, and Christina Nelson will talk about the organization and their goals. For a second time, Corey Richens is asking a judge to let her out of jail while she awaits a murder trial for allegedly killing her husband with a lethal dose of fentanyl. KPCW's Connor Thomas explains why.
In a new petition filed Tuesday, attorneys for Richens say it's not right to hold the Camas mother of three in jail for 2 years while she's presumed innocent. Richens has been in jail since May of 2023 after being arrested and charged with 11 felonies in connection with her husband's 2022 death. A trial is scheduled for May of next year. She's pleaded not guilty to all charges. And her attorneys argue that while in custody, Richens has proven she's not a danger to the community. They want 3rd District Judge Richard Mrozek to consider developments from the past year and a half. Summit County prosecutors have charged Richens with aggravated and attempted murder, drug distribution, and financial crimes. If convicted, she could spend the rest of her life in prison. But she's not facing the death penalty. Prosecutors formally took that off the table. That's one of the things the defense says has changed and justifies releasing Richens ahead of trial. Mrozek previously ruled that Richens was a flight risk and a danger to the community in part because at the time she was facing the death penalty. Her attorneys also say new evidence presented during August's preliminary hearing should factor into his decision. Documents filed alongside the petition show Richens has taken history, art, parenting, and botany courses while in jail. She's also enrolled in paralegal studies and an MBA program. Mrozek will consider the new information at a hearing November 12th where he could set bail. Summit County prosecutors have yet to file a response to the latest filing. The defense argues time is of the essence because Richens' relationship with her three children is being damaged. She claims she's not allowed to speak with them and that it took a court order to get a phone call, one that lasted only 2 seconds. If released, Richens proposes living with her brother and sister-in-law in Salt Lake County and participating in court-supervised visits with the children. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Wasatch County has nominated a new representative for the Military Installation Development Authority Board. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more about that.
The county has one local council member on the board of MIDA, a state agency originally formed to serve veterans and members of the military. Board members are appointed, not elected. Since 2019, that representative has been Steve Farrell, a longtime at-large council member. Farrell is not seeking re-election, so the council must recommend his successor by the end of November. At the county council meeting October 16th, a few council members volunteered to join the board. To ensure a fair pick, willing council members placed their names in a bowl, and the assistant county manager chose Carl McMillan in a blind draw. The governor must approve McMillan's appointment. McMillan serves in the county council seat F, representing Hideout and a large swath of eastern Wasatch County. His term runs through 2026. Councilmember Eric Rowland suggested McMillan shadow Farrell on the MIDA board to learn about the issues.
Steve, you have got significant influence on a lot of these boards, and a lot of it is because of the knowledge you have and the experience. And some of these are probably the most critical boards we have to be represented on.
As a member of the MIDA board, McMillan will attend monthly board meetings, plus boards for the Mountain Village and Golf and Equestrian Center districts, two sections of the land MIDA is developing in Wasatch County. Major development projects include the Sky Ridge Golf and Equestrian Facilities and much of the Deer Valley East Village expansion. Veterans, retirees, and active duty military members are eligible for some discounts on lodging and recreation at some of the venues. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And the Park City Board of Education will be talking about the opportunities shrinking student enrollment could create and plans for a multi-sport athletic facility at its meeting on Thursday. KPCW's Christine Weller has more about that.
Business Administrator Randy Upton will share preliminary enrollment numbers for this school year during the board meeting Thursday. Interim Superintendent Caleb Fine says the board will discuss options for future students based on the numbers.
We know that we've seen a trend in decreasing enrollment, so it opens up opportunities. We're well positioned if some new developments come online, and that's important. There's opportunities for dialogue about opening schools for the future board.
One option is increasing open enrollment for students outside of the district's boundaries. The district calendar committee will also present its recommendation for the 2026-27 calendar. Fine says there are multiple options to consider.
We're definitely very aware of some of the challenges our Jewish community has had in taking days off on some of their very important holidays, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah. We've added Yom Kippur to the calendar in the past, but they'll be able to discuss Rosh Hashanah as well.
The board will also review options for an athletic facility project and provide time for public comments on the closure of Treasure Mountain Junior High. The school will close after this school year, and the board has been working on a plan to build athletic facilities in place of Treasure. The current board wants to balance athletic needs for new softball, baseball, and other sports fields. The project will likely also require another voter-approved bond, as it could cost upwards of $50 million. Fine says it's been a pressing topic for the community.
The board is looking for what are the baseline improvements that are necessary, what allows flexibility for the future board so that they're not pigeonholed and in a situation where they can't bond or they have to bond.
Fine will also give his first report as interim superintendent since the board appointed him in September. The meeting is set for Thursday at 4 p.m. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, High Valley Transit held its inaugural fall planning retreat yesterday. On the phone, I have Executive Director of High Valley Transit, Caroline Rodriguez, along with Board Chair Kim Carson, joining me now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Caroline, at the retreat yesterday, the board got its first look at the 2025 budget. How much do you expect the budget to change before it's actually adopted in December?
I actually don't expect it to change very dramatically. We have a pretty good estimate of our revenues for the next year, and our expenses are not going up dramatically either. So I think we're pretty close this year. Of course, we need to sharpen our pencils and make some tweaks, but I think we're right around in the ballpark.
All right, so the budget does include some new as well as updated routes. One is called the Snowball Express. This is Line 109. This is aimed at getting skiers to Park City Mountain. Can you explain the route?
Yep. Well, you've just described it pretty well. I mean, it's extremely limited stops. There's only going to be two stops after the park and rides. So it is an express service directly from park and ride to Canyons Village and then Park City Mountain. That's it.
Oh, so the park and ride being at Ecker Hill. That's where I guess I'm confused from. Okay. All right. So you can go to, and that's going to be on what kind of time frequency?
We still need to finalize that. We are estimating every 15 minutes, but that's one of those things that comes down to budget. So we'll be looking at that over the next month to decide with the board what we're going to do.
Okay, so you're bypassing Kimball Junction and Deer Valley Resort. Why are you missing that resort?
Well, we're not going to Deer Valley because there's a lot of transit service already serving Deer Valley, especially on the Park City Transit side. So it's really not necessary for us to go to Deer Valley with the Snowball Express. If people want to ride High Valley and get to Deer Valley, they already have that option with the 101.
Now, is Park City Mountain helping to pay for the Snowball Express?
Well, Park City Mountain's contribution comes in the form of the tax revenues that they generate, which is how we're funded, but there is no direct contribution from them.
All right. Another possible change is doubling service on the 107 that's to and from Salt Lake City. Currently runs every 2 to 3 hours, I think. Are you seeing consistent ridership from the commuters there?
We are. We always see consistent ridership on our commuter routes, especially the 107. So this is in direct response to both the demand and the requests from riders.
So is it just commuters getting to from home to work, or has it become a skier bus yet?
It hasn't become a skier bus yet, but there are skiers on it, certainly. They're mostly resort workers coming up in the winter. Now, year-round, it's workers of all types that come up and that make the down trip from Summit County to Salt Lake.
And people are asking you for more stops in Salt Lake City, but apparently Utah Transit Authority, UTA, won't let that happen. How come?
You would have to ask them that.
So that's got to be, Kim, maybe incredibly frustrating. I mean, if the goal is to get people out of cars, who cares what transit authority they're riding?
Well, one difference is that UTA still charges fares. And so if we have a stop, people may choose our bus over theirs because they wouldn't have to pay and they could have, you know, realize a loss of revenue.
So is there any way you could perhaps get some help from the state legislature on this so that it doesn't become so competitive? Again, that's one of the state's goals, right? Get people out of their cars.
It is. And, you know, we could look at those stops and have conversations first with UTA. Maybe there's something that they could do to help those riders. But, you know, again, we'll have to look at the volume before we would want to get the legislature involved.
Yeah. And Caroline, I mean, you would know. I mean, people probably would ride the bus more if they don't have to transfer.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. If it's a one-seat ride, people are going to ride more frequently.
Okay. Other changes include extending the new Silver Creek Connector bus to Woodward. Tell me, you live in Silver Creek. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Give me an idea what this route looks like.
Well, this one doesn't go into Silver Creek Estates. It goes to Silver Creek Village. So that has been one anchor of this route. And the other anchor has been the Jeremy Ranch Park and Ride. And we just want to do the short extension up to Woodward because we have a huge number of riders that use our micro to get to Woodward because we don't have any bus service currently up there. So we feel like running that route, number one, it'll help serve the people that are interested in going up there. But it should also free up some capacity with our micro service.
Okay. And you don't believe it'll cost any extra to do that?
It will cost a little bit extra, just additional driver time.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be too significant. We think it'll be worth the extra cost and what we may realize in savings with the micro.
All right. So is the plan to extend service past Woodward up to Summit Park at some point?
We'll continue to look at that, but right now there is not the demand and it's quite a bit further.
All right. And Summit Park really doesn't have anywhere for residents to park right? I mean, for a bus stop, because that's what that would make it easier, right?
And that was an issue before, as there really wasn't anyone if they came down from their homes in Summit Park. But, you know, they are served very well with Micro currently.
All right. And then what about Silver Creek Estates? Is that ever going to be in the route at one point?
You know, the road just opened, and it's wonderful, I might add. And we'll continue to look at that. But I could see that being part of a loop in the future.
All right. Staff is also recommending increasing the frequency of the 10 Express. What's the timetable right now? Caroline, can you address that?
Right now it runs every 30 minutes. I think what we need to keep in mind is that a lot of the tweaks we made in terms of frequency and changing the alignments just a bit, they all work together in a holistic approach so that, for example, on the 10X, while we may be tweaking the frequency, there are still multiple services that run on 224. So it really is up to the riders to determine what's more important to them. Is it a one-seat ride? Is it getting there quickly? And so we have a host of different services that interline together to provide a lot of different opportunities to use public transit.
So getting there quickly, when you say that, does that mean transferring or does that mean just being there when the 10X is leaving?
It really could mean either, truly, because it really depends on what you as a rider want to do. If you want to save potentially 7 minutes on your trip and transfer, you can do that. If you want a one-seat ride and you want to take 10 minutes longer on your trip, you can also do that.
All right, so it doesn't sound like you will be increasing the frequency of the 10 Express.
Not the 10X, but there's other services that provide increased frequency on 224.
Okay. So again, those changes are only going to happen if the budget is adopted as is. Any danger that it won't be?
I mean, there's always a danger of that, but the board was very receptive to the budget that we have presented. We also were talking about services that the board has been looking at for quite a while. So I think it is a reasonable assumption that the board will move forward with this budget.
All right. You concur?
I do. And I might add, with adding the 109, that really came about because the 101 and the 10X were often full in the morning, especially during those peak powder days. So people were really frustrated because, yes, they're trying to take transit, but they go to get on a bus and they keep having full buses pass them. So the 109 Snowball Express should really help take up some of that pressure.
Okay. Changes to the 106, which runs to the Heber Valley, apparently tabled until Wasatch County decides what it wants to do with its sales tax questions?
Yes. They'll be talking over the next couple weeks, even into November, as they work on their 2025 budget. And they're looking at, they'll be collecting approximately $2.7 million with the new tax. That's on top of their existing, which is a similar amount. One tax is 0.25 and the other, the new one, is 0.3. And so they'll be looking at how they want to distribute those additional dollars. But we're hoping they'll find it worthwhile to help us expand that route.
Yeah. And Caroline, how long would it take for you to implement what they want done once they decide how much money they want to spend?
It will likely take a month at minimum, maybe more. It really is a matter of hiring and training staff.
So you do have the equipment, though, and the staff?
I guess we do have the equipment. We do not have the staff.
Okay. So the sooner the better.
Yeah.
Do they know that?
They do. I think their board, their council has some larger questions that they want to answer internally, such as what are we trying to do with transit? What do we want to accomplish? Those types of questions. So it's reasonable that they would address those before they decide exactly how to spend the money, but they do know that we are under a time constraint.
All right. I think both of you attended the planning panel there in Wasatch County. Did you talk to any residents, Kim?
Yes, I did. It was an interesting presentation. They had several different departments and started with a Q&A directed at the different departments and electeds. And then there was an opportunity for people to circulate around some tables afterwards. And so we did have several people come up. There's some people who are concerned, and this has been in the press, regarding a lot of young people using micro. And, you know, a gentleman, for instance, was telling me, you know, I used to ride my bike if I wanted to go to the gas station and get a soda, and now these kids are taking a micro there. And I think when you really look at the numbers, it's fairly minimal, and that's a more a parenting choice than, you know, what you want your kids, you know, to be able to do. We're not able to restrict riders per the FTA regulations, and there is an age limit of 10 as far as riding independently.
All right. There is that minimum age then.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Caroline, what are those numbers of teens, let's say, riding micro in Wasatch County?
Oh, I would have to check and get back to you, Leslie.
But it's not the majority is what I'm hearing.
No, there's a lot of people that use it for medical, shopping, things like that. But there are times when you have particularly seniors trying to get a ride with micro and they're unavailable. But they only have 3 vans working currently over there. And that's serving Midway, too, the majority of the valley floor. So they're looking at expanding that. So,
and that compares with how many? 3 vehicles compared to what do we have in the basin, Caroline?
Close to 15.
Oh, okay. 5 times. All right. I also want to just talk briefly. The retreat also covered the status of your fleet. The goal is to be all gas or electric by 2034. It sounds, though, like the industry is realizing that electric buses aren't where they need to be in terms of reliability. So how do they compare with the big, noisy, stinky diesel buses that we have?
Our data shows that it essentially takes up to 3 electric buses to do the work of 1 diesel bus in Summit and Wasatch counties. So that's where we are with the technology.
All right. And then go ahead.
I just want to add, too, that the new diesels are much more efficient than the old diesels. They're really not the big old stinky buses of the old days. Yes, you may see occasionally some exhaust, but they are a much cleaner running diesel bus.
Mm. Yeah, I just happened to be walking by one the other day, and it was so loud. It was surprising. Yeah, and in terms of like miles, I mean, you have to charge, I guess, the electric buses so much more often than going to fill up.
Right, it's about 120 miles versus 550.
Okay. And it sounds like transit agencies are actually trying to buy back the diesels. So what does that do to your bottom line? Caroline?
It's hard. It's really hard because previously, if we wanted to buy a used diesel, full-size bus, we could get one for, you know, $5,000 to $10,000, and now they're $100,000. And that's a very used diesel with 1 million miles on it. And that's even if you can find one. So it's very expensive and it's difficult to find, which is why we have a mix of electric and diesels. And we buy the vehicles that we can find almost regardless of the propulsion method.
So going forward, I mean, is that what you're going to stick with then, diesels? Does that make sense?
Well, the technology... No, go ahead, Caroline.
Go ahead, Kim. I think the technology is improving every single year. So we've already seen a change in some of the electrics and their dependability. And so we'll continue to pursue sustainable propulsion methods. It's just, you know, a bus, once you have the money to purchase, takes a year and a half to get. So it's really a 10-year horizon that you're planning out your fleet. and trying to procure those.
All right. You wanted to talk a little about the technology?
Yes. I just want to say that by 34, the time when we have the Olympics, we really hope to have made that transition to EVs. That's our goal.
Okay. And I guess we should note that you are still on schedule, Caroline, to open up the Silver Summit Depot this February?
Yes. That is our schedule.
That was an
Can't
adamant.
Can't come
yes.
soon enough.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to add?
I just want to say it was a great day yesterday, and we had wonderful presentations by our staff. They worked very hard on it, and we were there at the depot in a tent, so we were able to have lunch with a lot of the staff. And I want to do a special shout out to the maintenance team. They've been working hard to keep those EVs running and also the diesels. They keep the old diesel buses for old parts, and they've saved like over $90,000. Some of the parts you just can't find, and others just are so expensive because they're so hard to find. So hats off to them.
Okay. High Valley Transit Executive Director Caroline Rodriguez and Board Chair Kim Carson, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Park City Council meets Thursday in its regular session starting at 5:30 in the studio with a meeting preview. City Manager Matt Dias, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Let's see. We're running a little bit ahead of time, so I'm going to jump ahead.
Okay.
You've got a transportation operations update for the spring and summer of this year. The city did start a new pilot route, the TAN route, that goes to Park Meadows and Royal Street. It looks like you saw an average of about 3.3 customers per hour. So is that worth it to continue to pay what would be, you know what, I ballparked it at $20 a ride, given, you know, we've got the cost of staff, salary, benefits, and operation of the buses?
That's a very fair question, and I think our policymakers toil with those types of questions every day. I think if you look at the system as a whole, obviously, we are trying to provide as much transit services as we can in as many locations as possible. These two areas in particular, I believe the Park Meadows area had previously not been served. And I want to recall that the Royal area had been served by a regular transit route. And then at one point, both were served by micro transit. And so there was actually some sense of a loss there, that there was sort of a taking of a previous level of service. And so whether or not that's something that will continue, that's something we'll continue to evaluate. You know, the return on investment is very important to us. But frequently we are told there are residents that would regularly ride these routes if there was service in front or near their homes. And we're doing our best to constantly evaluate the cost of providing that service vis-a-vis getting people into our transit system, getting them downtown or to the resorts or occupational opportunities in transit as opposed to their car.
So does the pilot program continue?
Currently, that's what's recommended. I think this is a relatively low frequency route too. So I don't believe it's a high frequency route in terms of the cost. But you know, we have these tough decisions to make throughout our community. So this is exactly what our policymakers will have to toy with. We do, fortunately, though, have three routes that we are sort of reforming from Richardson Flat, and that's sort of the thrust of the report. So we are renaming some of our Richardson Flat routes. I'll go through them really quickly if I can. You said you were in a rush, but we're excited to have a Deer Valley Express, a Park City Mountain Express, and an Old Town Express. So all three of those routes this winter will be functioning out of the Richardson Flat Park and Ride. Two of them, the Deer Valley Express and the Park City Mountain Express, will also improve their frequencies. So during peak periods, I believe they'll go down to 15-minute frequencies from that Park and Ride, as well as all-day and late-night service to the Old Town Transit Center. So three sort of elevated levels of service there. The resorts will contribute to the underlying cost of those routes. And, you know, pretty soon here, we flip the switch into winter levels of service.
Right. And so the resorts, both Deer Valley and Park City, are helping to pay for those direct routes?
They have an annual contribution that for, I believe, the last four, almost 5 years, they've both been helping to contribute to those routes because they're servicing them directly. They've made the case that, and I think we agree, an elevated sort of express level of service to those locations will entice more people to ride, and we agree, but there is a cost share. with that elevated level of service, and they've been willing to accommodate some of that.
So when we talk about express, that means we reduce stops. Are we talking about including the Park City High School stop as well as maybe a Fresh Market stop?
Both of those are included. That's correct.
And that's about it.
There might be one more. I can't remember the other one. Oh, Park City Heights will both be served. So Park City Heights, Fresh Market, the high school. That's off the top of my head, so I hope I'm not missing something there. But unlike the other routes, which will have stops every, let's say, quarter of a mile, these just have three or four, so they truly are express routes.
Okay, and I saw it was like we're renaming the bus routes, and I guess I would question that. I mean, it just seems like the colors are so effective, especially when telling tourists. I mean, I sit on a bus and people want to know, and it's like, oh, yeah, you want the red bus, or you want the yellow bus. No, you want the blue bus. To me, that's easy. When I start thinking about numbers, man, it's anybody's guess.
I encourage you to bring that type of public comment to the mayor and council. That's exactly the type of thing that our policymakers want to hear as we're devising and modernizing our system. We have comments that go the other way. We have a lot of riders who come into town and have a singular destination. They want to go to Main Street, or they just want to go to Deer Valley. So I guess it cuts both ways, but that's precisely the type of input and feedback that we would want to hear, because we want to create a system that is as responsive as possible to the most users as possible. We want it to be user-friendly. That's exactly what the type of input we'd want to hear.
All right, and then this is actually, I guess, follows the trends of our aging community. ADA ridership up by 14%. They say likely due to the discontinuation of Micro, but is the city going to need to add to that fleet?
We may. I think it's a service we've had in place for a long, long time, and I agree with you. I think the turnover from moving from microtransit has pushed more people that were previously riding microtransit into that. And I believe that's the sort of year-over-year anomaly.
All right. Looking ahead, there's this, I think it's Recreate 248 project, not Recreate 248. So what is this? Are we going back to looking at widening 248?
We are. Recreate 248 is a planning process with state and federal entities. So UDOT, Summit County, the Federal Highway Organization, where we are comprehensively looking at that corridor and evaluating all of the modes for a future project that would receive federal funding. So much like Summit County evaluated the 224 corridor, we are engaged in that process now with the state and federal entities for sort of the 248 corridor. Now, this includes multiple modes of transportation. So it's not just a widening, it's not just buses, it's not just trains, it's not aerial amenities, it's all of the above. The federal government has a process where you do a comprehensive alternatives analysis. You have to do an environmental analysis. Fortunately, to your point, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I'd say about 30% of this was already done. So we are not starting from scratch. We will have an accelerated planning process as a result. But we're going to be comprehensively looking at that corridor, how to increase efficiency, what types of modes we're going to be prioritizing, and then what types of federal programming and grants may be available to Park City.
Okay. And our bus rapid transit lanes, are they, like, done?
They will be contemplated in the planning process, but so will trains, so will tunnels, so will aerials, so will widening, leaving things as is, the do-nothing alternative. Comprehensive analysis for the 248 corridor. It's arguably our most congested arterial right now, and the community's been very clear that they want to see something done, and they want it done before it's too late. And so we are using past planning documents and processes to accelerate that process, working with the federal and state entities in Summit County. And our hope is to do something comprehensive on this back door. I don't want to get ahead of myself. There'll have to be a preferred option. There's environmental analysis that is required. We will need federal funding if it's going to be comprehensive, but we are well on our way.
All right. It's made a huge difference for those needing to make a left-hand turn from Park City onto US 40 there.
It's made a huge difference. And that entire intersection out there is going to, I think, over the next 5 to 7 years, go through some significant upgrades comprehensively.
All right. Let's see. The city is going to replace the in-ground sensors that show how many parking spots are available in the China Bridge parking garage. Apparently, they are not working with our snow and salt.
I believe they're 5 or 6 years old. So we have had some malfunctions, and the technology, believe it or not, is already relatively antiquated. And so it was twofold, I think. It was time to renew the technology, and we were having equipment failures. And so we went out for bid. Most of the equipment has actually evolved from moving away from in-ground centers. And even sort of the mast and boom checkpoints of getting in and out of a garage, and more using AI technology and video technology and cameras to do real-time occupancy, space counts, load-in, load-outs, and understanding periods of congestion, utilization. So we've just procured a new vendor here. I think it's been 5, 6, almost 7 years since the last time we had a vendor do this for us.
Okay, and I guess I was just surprised. That's like $4,500 a month to operate that
contract. It's a little bit of both because it's the equipment and the technology over 5 years. So I think that's fair. It's software, it's maintenance, and it's the hardware and the equipment plus the installation. It's a pretty significant undertaking. But we've made a lot of improvements in the China Bridge infrastructure of the last 5 to 7 years. I think, you know, when I first showed up in this town, there was very little signage, very little technology. You can now pay by your phone. You can pay through an app. You can pay at a station. The signage is everywhere. It doesn't mean it can't be improved, but we've come a long way in a short time.
All right. You were here for the before paid parking.
I was.
Let's see. Council will also consider the amendment to the 1986 soil cover ordinances. Can you kind of run through some of the changes that are contemplated here?
Yeah, I think the big picture is this is part of a multi-year effort where we are working to ensure that our soils cover ordinance reflects applicable standards and best practices that have that change over time. So with federal and state law, environmental laws, just making sure that our local ordinance is reflective of those and the changes that is occurring both in our natural environment and at the regulatory level. So, you know, I think just to summarize at a high level, we're trying to clarify the reuse requirements for soil both on and off-site properties, meaning like segregating the soils on your property, contaminated vis-a-vis what is not contaminated. And if you're in that soil boundary, what you have to keep on site and what you have to truck away, reducing the penalty for a violation from a misdemeanor to an infraction, and then kind of standardizing the cap types. In the past, it had been I think just more or less soil or some sort of natural environment, but now we're allowing asphalt and concrete and other means and methods that are now applicable standards in other communities. And so really, it's just sort of the evolution of things. This was a commitment, particularly of the mayor, when she became the mayor, of making sure that this ordinance was evolving over time and meeting best practices. So those are sort of the highlights. But a lot of work's been done over this. I think we had an initial soil convening in maybe 2003 and another one in 2013 and 2017. I believe you were on one of the committees.
Yeah.
And so sort of following that progression over time.
And one of those recommendations was to have some sort of local repository. So those living within the soil boundary could build a fence, you know, dig out post holes or plant a tree and dig out a hole big enough because you dig far enough, you're going to come across that tailings, you know, layer. That still hasn't been done. Is there a way to do that?
It depends. I believe the soils ordinance now, depending on the type of soil that you are identifying through testing and through sampling and through monitoring, will require you to either manage the soil on site or move it to an off-site location, and then depending on the nature of that material, about which location it can go to. So there are projects that occur here in Park City. The municipality is able to work with the county and use one of our landfills. And then there's other types of soil that we have to move all the way out to Tooele or other types of facilities. So it really depends on the type of soil and the type of materials at the location.
And is there going to be an effort to retest all of those clean topsoil caps at some point?
Perhaps. I don't think that's contemplated in here, but that's a fine suggestion.
Well, I think some people would say no thanks. It's expensive.
It is, and obviously the municipality has a lot of property under its control, and we have all sorts of capital projects. We're doing a park or a pathway, renovating a playground, and so we're doing regular soil testing throughout town. We're doing capital projects and development.
Sure. Anything else that you wanted to mention from the agenda that I didn't get to?
Well, one thing I wanted to talk about is we were planning to discuss a resident permit parking program update. That's primarily in the Old Town area, but we've delayed that item. It wasn't quite ready. We probably got ahead of ourselves, and so we're delaying it likely to a meeting in December. So just want to get that word out. We had put some flyers out, and we had contacted some property owners and residents that were particularly interested in discussing this and just said, hold up, we're throwing the agenda item, and we'll be talking about it in December. So I just wanted to make sure people knew that.
Okay. But we'll have something in place before the kind of the busy season?
Well, I don't know. I guess that depends on the policy discussion. Nothing brings people out like changing parking regulations. It doesn't matter if it's paid parking or permit parking. So I don't want to get ahead of myself, but we will be discussing it in December.
Okay. Park City Manager Matt Dias, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. I appreciate it.
Well, the Meals on Wheels organization has been around since 1954. It's grown into one of the largest and most effective social movements in the country, helping nearly 2.2 million seniors every year. Locally, the organization is Meals on Wheels, serving Summit, Utah, and Wasatch counties. Joining me in studio now to tell us more, I have the executive director, Chris Nelson, along with board members and local residents, Claudia McMullen and Eileen Mulane. Good morning.
Morning,
Good
Leslie.
Hi, Leslie.
So, Chris, maybe tell us a little bit about how the Wasatch-backed Meals on Wheels group has been around recent, it sounds like.
We've been providing Meals on Wheels to Wasatch and Summit County for over 10 years, potentially even longer. I think it's been longer. But just recently, we've experienced significant financial shortfall where we've had to establish this nonprofit to adjust the funding and to make up for deficits in funding to serve the people.
Okay, so what's new? The organization isn't new. You've been here doing it, but running into some financial shortfalls?
The service is not new. The provision of Meals on Wheels is not new to Summit Wasatch Counties. The creation of a nonprofit to fund the difference between the need and the amount of money required to fulfill the need is what's new. So prior to 2 years ago, the service was provided via MAG, Mountain Lands Association of Governments. They had an aging services division of which I sat on the board when I was on the county council. So I used to go on Meals on Wheels deliveries when I was on the county council. It was a provision, it was a service provided by MAG. Now that service is now being provided by the offshoot nonprofit, which is called Meals on Wheels for Summit, Wasatch, and Utah County.
Ah, okay. So MAG still exists, though.
MAG still exists. It's just an it's a nonprofit that spun off of MAG.
Okay. And so that's how you got involved, Claudia,
as myself. There's a shortfall between public and private funding. And what is happening in our community here, Summit County, is the senior population is growing. I heard a number yesterday, upwards of 28% of our population are seniors. And it's growing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How many meals do you provide at this point, Chris?
We're well over 1,000 meals per month in Summit, and the same number for Wasatch County.
Okay. And do you oversee that entire Summit, Wasatch, Utah County?
Yes. Yes. We have one of the largest Meals on Wheels programs as far as number of clients served in the state.
I'm surprised. Why is Utah County part of this?
Oh, I know the answer to that because I asked the exact same question. It was created, Mountain Lands, in 1950. So the state was just divided into service areas. Mm-hmm. And we happened to be, Summit was with Utah County and Wasatch.
And it's the same service area that MAG services. Mountain Lands Association of Governments is those three counties. And the key to this organization is, like, what was shocking to me when I started getting involved was I didn't realize that there were seniors and people in need within our community who are not getting fed. And they're not getting fed because there's a wait list because there's not enough money to feed them, which is why we exist, to create, to raise the funds necessary to service the demand in our community.
And end the wait.
And end the wait list.
Hmm.
So it was stunning to me.
How many people on the wait list?
Organization-wide, we have over 300. So part and parcel of Wasatch and Summit County is getting the word out. We know that the population exists, and we know that we're getting calls daily for service for you know, qualified and eligible individuals here in the area.
And it's not just people that are alone. It's not financially based. I ran into some people that they had knee surgery. They're by themselves. They have stairs. So it we serve anybody that is isolated and needs food.
Mm-hmm. All right. And how much does it cost them? It's free?
We ask for a contribution, but it's absolutely not required, just to help with funding and keeping the program viable.
Yeah. So what's the suggested donation? $5 a meal or something? Or?
Four. Mm-hmm. We just raised it from three. So.
All right. And then how is it funded at this point? Is it a state-run or a national-run program, federally?
We have funding from both, mm-hmm. state and federal. With inflation and just some of the economic challenges we've had over the last few years, it's not kept up, which is why we formed this nonprofit, and which is why we're here kind of putting it out there that we're looking for some partners and some sponsors to help us help more people. We will run out of money. Mm-hmm. If we don't make some changes and get some partners, we will run out of money.
That's what was so surprising to me, is I assumed that the state and federal funding would meet the need, and it doesn't. It's finite. And when the need exceeds that finite funding, that's when people go without food, and that's why we exist, to raise the funds to meet the need for our community out there. Because, you know, a lot of times, it's the only meal somebody eats in a day, and a lot of times, it's the only human somebody interacts with in a day. And it's critical that we meet the need of all of the citizens of Summit County who have these needs.
Yeah, and sometimes it's the driver. I mean, KPCW yep. had that story a while ago, basically saying that it was the Meals on Wheels driver mm-hmm. that found a woman that
Absolutely.
Had fallen and couldn't get up.
Absolutely. He recognized, he was used to the route, recognized the... you know, the issue with her not answering the door.
Yeah. So if somebody were to call and say, you know what, I'd like to sign up, you would tell them, sorry, no?
We certainly do an assessment. There's a tiered eligibility level. There are really dire emergency circumstances that on the short term we can take care of, just to make sure that a caseworker or someone can get in to assist and that they're assisted nutritionally. But otherwise, they do go on a wait list, and we average 20 to 25 calls for service a week. Of those, probably 8 to 10 go on the wait list. The rest of them are either not eligible or potentially have other sources.
All right, so when you talk about sponsors or partners, I mean, what are you looking for?
We're looking for, well, it's twofold. We're looking for volunteers. We're looking for folks that are willing to take an hour a week or an hour every couple of weeks to help us deliver the meals, but really we're looking for money. We're looking for financial sponsorships, community organizations and corporations that understand the need, recognize that these are neighbors, this is your community, and want to help.
All right, and then how is that done? I mean, people just can contact you, but certainly individuals could make donations online?
Absolutely. Our website is www.mowsuw.org, and that's Meals on Wheels, Summit, Utah, Wasatch.
All right, and then in terms of the volunteer need, people
information is on the website as well. You can sign up to be a volunteer, and we're careful about volunteers. We want folks that can get into homes. We do background checks. We are we pay attention to who's going to these homes.
Aren't they trained to look for problems in the home?
Like to look for hazards, ice? To look for life safety issues, absolutely.
Okay, because that's a requirement then for somebody to get a meal is to have their home inspected?
Their home is inspected and our volunteers are trained to look for issues, ice on the sidewalk or maybe a stair rail that's loose.
Okay, so if you've touched somebody, have them give you a call then.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm out of time, but thank you, Chris Nelson, Claudia McMullen, and Eileen Mullane.